Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
The WeatherTech Sports Car Championship on IMSA Radio.
So counting down to the green flag here at Sebring for this first of the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship runs. An hour and 30 minutes. Jeremy Shaw is alongside me in the booth. We'll have a quick chat with him in a moment. Let's check in with our CrowdStrike pit lane reporters. First of all, let's say good morning again to Nick Damon for the first time in the WeatherTech pit lane here at Sebring. You're a big fan of Petit Le Mans. How is Sebring stacking up so far?
It's stacking up very well, but you don't want to hear from me. You want to hear from a man who's driving the car we're all talking about. It's Romain Grosjean about to get into the 63. Well, in a while. Are you as excited for the debut as we all are?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a beautiful project, it's a beautiful car, and we're excited to be here. There's still a lot of work to be done on the car, but generally everyone has been doing a great job.
What's the realistic aims for the car this weekend?
Finish the race. I think Sebring 12 hours is a really good test. The track is bumpy and difficult, so if we can finish the race in one piece, that'd be great.
You got the car itself, the chassis itself, got some race action last week in Qatar. What did the team learn from that first competitive outing?
Yeah, I think we have a good baseline. There's a good thing about being a year later than everyone else, that we don't have the gremlins from the hybrid that some may have in Qatar, but they also have one more year of experience on everything, so there's still a lot we need to learn, and that's going to come with racing.
And what's the programme for today? Will all three of you get a go in the car, or will you concentrate on one driver initially?
I think for the first session, it's two drivers, Andrea Caldarelli and Matteo Cairoli, and then the afternoon is Matteo, and then I think I may do a little bit, and then at night we're going to try to have the three drivers all go.
Great stuff. Thank you, Romain. It's Romain Grosjean, who's about to get, well, in a couple of hours, getting the 63. The car's about to go out with Matteo Cairoli. And to answer your question, I'm absolutely loving Sebring, John. It's fantastic. And there is shade at the moment, so it's not too hot either.
Yeah, some news, thank you, Nick. Some news from Lamborghini is that the veteran technical director, Giorgio Sana, head of programme, really, has left Lamborghini. His duties have been taken over by Ruven Moore, the technical director, for now, at least. And John De Geest and Sportscar 365 breaking that story earlier on today. The no further details from either Giorgio or from Lamborghini, but I was at Qatar and Giorgio wasn't there for what were described then for personal reasons, so I think we leave that at that and wait until we have something concrete from either parties. But Giorgio Sana has been with Lamborghini forever and a day. Jeremy.
Absolutely right, John. And with Giorgio leaving and Chris Ward departing the scene from Lamborghini North America last season as well, a very different Lamborghini competition department, at least so far as the US is concerned, because Giorgio was also very much a part of the scene over here as well, even though, of course, based in Italy. But, wow, that's a major change.
Whatever the situation, we wish him well for that, as that comes through.
Good guy.
It's
Formula Ford racer as well.
Which makes him an even better guy in your eyes, of course,
right.
Jeremy. Yeah. This is an open session, so the cars are going out. The Mustang sampling 963 Porsche is out but not moving at the moment. It has come to a stop. Let's see who took that car out. Well, I try to work that. Is he just trying to find a gap in the traffic or not? It's literally just out of turn one, over the driver's left-hand side. We'll try and find out a little bit more about that. While Shea Adam, good morning, Shea.
Good morning, John.
Speaks to Davide Rigo.
Good morning, Davina. First question I have to ask, what time is it? Have you been wearing the Rolex?
Sahana, that was amazing, really, really amazing. Now it's past that, so it was, of course, the big achievement of the year. Now we have a bit more relaxed. Now, of course, now focus to here. Sebring is an amazing track, very, very different than Daytona. Now fully focused here, the BOP change, of course, but we will try to do our best with together with the team. It is easy for sure. The Daytona winning give us a lot of energy, positive energy, and we are very focused to do a good result in here, and we will do our best.
This is a track where normally you've been doing the WEC as well, so now having singular focus, does that make your weekend easy, just the one series?
Yeah, of course, this year we have just only car to concentrate. Last year in the end that was okay because we were able to achieve the best performance as well, but we have more time to stay together with the team and prepare properly the race. And let's see after FP1 how it will be. Every time is a surprise here in Sebring, change a lot the lap time from the testing during the race, then the race. And we're fully ready.
So is the watch at home? Is it in a safe?
Yeah, in the safe place, yes.
All right, that's one winner, John. He's not wearing his Rolex, but he definitely appreciates it.
Yeah, of course he does. Absolutely understand that. Red flag has understandably come out for the stranded Porsche of the Mustang sampling team. That's going to be a little bit of a frustration for Jimmy Bruni behind the wheel of the Proton Competition Mustang sampling gold and black car. And that, I mean, that's literally just out of the pit lane. So whatever's happened there has happened very quickly for Jimmy. No time set. The clock will continue to run. What a fabulous looking field, Jeremy. What have we got? 58 cars. So barely any change in terms of the numbers from what we had at Daytona, and it's been a long time since we've been able to see that. One or two changes in the personnel and some slightly different cars. But my goodness me, what a fabulous entry it is. The Adam Adelson Wright Motorsports Porsche in its almost lotus colours of dark green and yellow, but with the outlines of the circuits of IMSA on those yellow racing stripes, which is a lovely touch. And I actually quite like the fact that the racing stripes aren't central on that car. They're actually pushed over the top of the driver's head to the left-hand side of the car. Looking an absolute picture at the moment in the pit lane. So after the excitement of Daytona, a fabulous entry as we have here, Jeremy, and the championships, of course, getting in now to their stride. We always say that Daytona's a bit of an outlier, but isn't Sebring as well in some ways? Because and then we go to we've got Long Beach to come, not for every class, of course. So the opening races in some ways, the start of the season is all a bit one-off in terms of the circuits.
Yeah, very true, John. I mean, we go to all these completely different sorts of racetracks, so it's hard to kind of get into a rhythm, if you like, in terms of, you know, what to expect, because these cars are so different, and within each class, so any sort of patterns are emerged, are sort of softened, if you like, by the balanced performances. Tweaks again coming into this weekend, but as you suggest, Daytona is kind of a different kind of springboard to use for the rest of the season. It's an anomaly. Really, any changes to the specifications of the cars that are demanded for here really relate more back to Petit Le Mans at the end of last season than they do from Daytona in terms of the competitive elements, and then from here. It's sort of incremental from here on in, but it's just Daytona's the outlier, it's picking a winner coming into this weekend here is going to be really, really difficult because all the cars are competitive in each of the classes. It's great to see because here compared to the end of last season, we didn't have either the new Chevrolet GT3 car or the new Ford Mustang GT3 car. And the GTD Pro category this year is just so much stronger than it was last season with the addition of the Fords and a second Chevrolet this season. Number three and four cars are two quote-unquote factory cars as they've been in the past, but it's not really a factory operation anymore at Pratt & Miller. There's a lot of factory assistance there still, but it's a different way that team has been running in the past. They've got some different commercial opportunities there and some partnerships that they are bringing out really for the first time this year with Oshkosh, which is a major corporation that is involved in that sponsorship of that team now moving forward.
Just before we go, Graham, let's check back in with our two pit lane reporters. Shay Adam, first of all, with news of four cars penalties for something that I've not seen on a timing screen before. Shay, explain, please. What is the logistics protocol being?
All of the Iron Lynx cars are going to have to serve a drive-through penalty for a logistics breach. That is their penalty. Basically, when trying to get the cars parked, the trucks parked, I should say, at the beginning of the weekend, everybody needs to be on the same channel. Everyone needs to pay attention. We all need to work together to try and get this done because there are a lot of trucks that need to get put in place. And if you are not on your radio and not paying attention, well, it makes everybody's life more difficult. That is the first part of their penalty. The second part, they were still working on setting up their pit box when the Michelin Pilot Challenge session was going on, and no WeatherTech team is allowed to work in their pit box if they don't share it or if they do when Michelin Pilot Challenge is on track, because it is technically the right of the Michelin Pilot Challenge competitors to use the pit boxes during that time.
Well, virtually all the field is streaking past because I've meandered up to pit exit. Now, those of you familiar with Sebring from various simulators and for smaller events, but think that, oh, the actual pit boxes end just before the Mobil 1 bridge, which is celebrating 50 years of Mobil 1. In fact, that you'd think, as I did yesterday, the last car or the last garage was the Penske Porsches. But no, what they've added, when you get past the championship leader, is its very own row of woe, a la Le Mans, because they've actually, after a kind of big gap about 80 metres, they had, then have about seven or eight cars have had to fit in at the end. And by the end, the final one of those, which is the 81 P2 car, that is having to turn sharp left just to get through the timing and scoring and RFID checks at the end of the pit lane. So the pit out element, and interesting also, is the pit gets slightly wider there again, so you can't actually, so these will be completely hidden from my staring down the pit lane. The only other disadvantage I can see, because being near pit out actually often is a tactical advantage, often as far as they're getting out of a busy situation during yellow flags, there is a disadvantage in that they are not benefiting from the shade of the main grandstand from which you're broadcasting from, John, so it's very notably much hotter here. And despite the attempts of various very improvised tent-like structures, I think this is going to be the sweatier end of the pit. Whether it's the quicker end, can't tell you. But I've now decided we now have the Sebring row of woe.
Okay. Very good. The annex on the end. It was cars 63, 19, 60 and 83. So, as she said, all of the Iron Lynx cars. A second penalty for the number 83 Iron Lynx, but he's going to be leaving the pit box early, and for the 60 car as well. So not a stellar opening for Iron Lynx. The good news is the SC63 is going round the hairpin at turn 7, and for the first time in the US, I got to see it up close and personal at Qatar a couple of weeks ago, we have a Lamborghini GTP on the circuit. Four wide for a moment on the back stretch, as we had LMP2, two versions of GTD as well, side by side for a moment. It's the Wins car, number two machine, that is streaking away with Ben Hanley behind the wheel for United Autosports USA. It's been a busy few days for quite a lot of these drivers. There was a ELMS and WEC test in Italy on Sunday and Monday, and many of the drivers and some of the team members have come straight from that, so they were looking a little bit jet lagged and for the worse for wear in the early part of the week. Out comes the ERA car, but going slowly out of, on the run down to the hairpin, it's the number 18 shades of blue LMP2 car we're talking about.
That won at Daytona.
Yeah, so therefore championship leader.
Yeah, because this year, unlike right, last year, Daytona is around the overall series championship for LMP2.
Good point. That's a very good point. And actually, while we're talking LMP2s, really interesting start, and not bringing any confidences here because it was a timed session in Italy at Imola. The LMP2s in Europe have been given back their power, and they're pretty much back to their original running spec, although they still have to run with the low downforce bodywork. They're the top class in the European Le Mans series, the ELMS, and for this year they're going to be running much quicker in that championship. How much quicker? Well, I was talking to Daniel Hunkadea at breakfast this morning and a couple of team members, and there were some LMDHs there, GTP cars there, including the Penske Porsches, and their P2s were anything between a second and a half and 2.5 seconds quicker than the current LMDH cars, and therefore GTPs. So the LMS is going to be worth watching this year. It's going to be outstanding. But that just shows you how much they were slowed down over the last 4 or 5 years. Remember, they were here in IMSA, Jeremy, fighting for overall championships not so very long ago. Colin Brown and very nearly won the championship whilst they were in the same category. In fact, that led to them being slowed down quite a lot, didn't it?
Yeah, the factories didn't appreciate being beat.
No, indeed. Went down to the last race at PLM. So we are running again. Nick mentioned the Mobil 1 50th anniversary bridge. We've got a number of cars who are Mobil 1 partners and have been for some time, who are also running very lovely gold liveries, including both of the Pratt Miller Corvettes. And they are gold, not yellow gold. This is sort of a satin gold. The car that we often refer to as having the gold front, the 01 Cadillac, that is now properly gold. That absolutely looks phenomenal in the morning sunshine. And last year's championship winning Lexus as well is running in a black and gold rather than a yellow and gold. That is the Cadillac engine you hear behind my voice at the moment. And that all down to the fact that is a half century, a golden anniversary this year for Mobil 1. First fully synthetic motor oil, originally developed for use in the aircraft industry, and then some clever person realised what it could do to revolutionise lubrication in internal combustion engines. All of the Mobil 1 partners work very closely with Mobil 1. Ran a few stories a few years ago in our Le Mans coverage that reflected just how they go on. They take a mobile laboratory to all the big races. And when we say that the lubricant, particularly fully synthetic down through the years, is a performance accessory, people often turn their nose up at that. But because the engine runs cooler with fully synthetic Mobil 1, it means you need fewer radiators and less cooling surfaces. That means you make your car more aerodynamic, and that means it can go faster, and that's never mind the power losses. Slight spin for the number 60 Iron Lynx. That's the bright yellow car. They've had it all now. Tick everything off the bingo card.
Two drive-throughs and a spin already.
Four six drive-throughs and a spin for Ian Linsk at the moment. Let's head down to the pit lane and to our CrowdStrike reporter, Nick Damon, who's with another Nick, Nick Yellerly.
We haven't got into yet, the 25 BMW. So what was the debrief after Daytona? Because it looked like the car was sort of there, but they both had that problem, which you can't come back from, but it was only like a 15-minute problem, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly right. Obviously, you don't want any technical issues to happen. We know the reasons why. I feel like we have solved them coming into this race. We had a pretty decent test, I would say, two or three weeks ago when we were here as well. Considering we've been, let's say, floating between the top three or four for most of the race until that point, it was a little bit frustrating, of course, for the whole crew after all the hours and the good improvement from last year. But, yeah, we'll be back fighting here, that's for sure.
Last week, of course, we saw the debut of this car in the WEC run by Vincent Voss and WRT. How much can you learn from that car, which did, in fact, seem to struggle a bit with whichever BOP or it had? Or is it completely different when you come to the IMSA race?
I mean, this circuit in particular is different just because of the nature of the circuit, how bumpy it is, how you need the damping to be set, and just the car in general. But a lot more can be done between the two programs in terms of making sure your systems are working, you know, as good as they can be. So I think that's been a good help. Also, more driver point of views. We have experienced guys now on both sides of the Atlantic racing the car much more often. And I think you saw that with the other manufacturers last year, that they, when they started running their programs in unison a bit more, the progression rate was higher.
Coming back to Sebring, coming back to your challenge, what is the chief challenge for you over these next 4.5 hours of setup time?
To get dialed in, I would say mostly for the race, because that's where the points are. Naturally, it's 3 weeks later than when we tested here, so the temperatures are going to be a lot hotter. So making sure all our tire pressures are right, actually seeing how the setup in general has evolved with the heat. Max wasn't here at the test, so getting as many laps in as we can for him as well, because this car at this place takes a few laps to get dialed into, as I'm sure you can imagine. So, yeah, just ticking off our boxes and making sure we're best prepared for the 12 hours on Saturday.
We've seen quite a lot of incidents. In fact, the last couple of races have been decided by late race incidents. I mean, is it a very tricky place to race side by side in, or are those just outliers?
Yeah, I mean, here is very difficult because it's so narrow, very unforgiving. There's bumps in places you may not really appreciate, to be honest. Also with the traffic, because they're trying to hang on to their GT cars as well. And I've been in that situation, holding onto a GT car for hours upon end, and it's difficult. So to be aware of what's going on when these super fast prototypes are coming up behind you is hard. And then as a driver in the GTP, judging which way to go when you're trying to be, let's say, overly aggressive to get that win. Yeah, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And I would say last year was a good example of that.
Nick, thanks, and best luck to you and the team.
Yeah, nice one, thank you.
Nick Yellerly and Nick Dearman in that CrowdStrike pit lane report. At IMSA Radio, if you'd like to get in touch, hello to Rye, to Alan Space, and plenty of other people who are tuned in at the moment. 100.9 FM around the circuit if you're struggling to hear us over the noise of 42 cars out on the circuit at the moment. We'll pick off a few more drivers as the teams are settling in. The lap times are pretty good. We'll talk about that in a moment, but let's go to our CrowdStrike pit lane again. Our reporter is Shea Adam, and she's with Kenton Cook.
Kenton, you were one of the fastest drivers last year in this race. You were the fastest guy in this car, and with the only BOP change being a liter of fuel added, how happy are you to be back at Sebring International Raceway with a real shot to win the 12-hour?
Well, I think quickest is maybe an overstatement. When everyone's within a tenth of a second, you know. But, yeah, it's great to be able to hold a candle to the guys that I'm driving with right now. It's super fun to be with KPM. And certainly I think what IMSA did with the BOP changes was good. It was all fair, I thought. Last year we had a good run. We were really close to winning that one, so hopefully this year we'll have a better shot. Hopefully we get the shot to be in the same opportunity as we were in last year, right at the end with the pace. Early days in practice so far, we'll see where everyone stacks up. Hopefully we can get a win.
There's another problem out on track for the Iron Lynx car, so that's another tick in their column of not having a great day. Daytona for KPM. I like that, by the way. I'm going to run with KPM. Daytona went well in terms of you guys won the Michelin Endurance Cup in 2023, and you came out of that race leading the points again. Are you focusing, and the team, or is everyone focusing on trying to replicate that championship?
Well, we want to win some races. And last year, you know, we were obviously trying to do that. But we were also focusing on in the middle of the race on the strategy to try to optimize the points, because obviously you get different points throughout the hours of the race and the endurance side. And we were trying to make sure we got as many points at those marks in time. And at the end of the race, sometimes that hurts your strategy. So this year, we're not focusing on trying to get the max amount of points. Daytona, we just got lucky. We were in the right place at the right time. But this year, we're going to try to make sure we're optimizing ourselves for the end. And if we don't end up with the best points at a certain time, we're not going to lose sleep over it. So we really want to win races this year.
It's the 19 Iron Lynx Lamborghini out on track, by the way, with Mirko Bortolotti. He's pulled off to the side of the track. We'll keep an eye on that while this is this chat's going on. But Ken and I got to ask, the excitement of getting another race this year. Because even though you're only doing the endurance races, Indy's now an Enduro too. So five races on the calendar. How does that change your outlook with the team and maybe getting a full season ride in the future?
Well, I'm happy to be driving. So, you know, to have another one on the list this year in a GTD car, I'm just over the moon. So I'm super thankful to have the opportunity that I am in right now with these guys, with a phenomenal team, a bunch of good guys and whatnot. Obviously, if a full-time opportunity came, then I would never say no. The group of drivers that we have, you know, with Mike and Mick, they're really good. They work really good together. If I can continue to be in the role that I'm in now, I'm very happy with that as well. I'm happy. I don't know what to tell you other than I'm super stoked just to be here.
Good luck this weekend, Kenton.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Right, let's catch up on what was happening there whilst Shea was talking to Kenton Cook. We've still got Bortolotti trying to get back in that number 19 Lamborghini from Iron Lynx. Their bingo card is filling up rather quickly in the first 20 minutes or so of this session. 24 minutes gone. Scott Andrews has just had an off-track moment in the Lone Star AMG, the team who decided who won the championship last year. Let's not forget. Very interesting in WeatherTech this year. That car back in the pit lane, that number 80 for Scott Andrews. After, as I say, a little off-track moment. AWA with their number 13 Corvette just going through turn one and making just about enough room for the Lamborghini, bright yellow Lamborghini, to go through. It's the number 60 car that was spun earlier on, 60. My mouse is going to get a lot of scrolling this weekend up and down this timing screen. Matteo Cressoni in the Iron Lynx number 60.
Yeah, and the GGP car from Lamborghini did the outlap as now situated itself in the pit lane, I think. I don't think it's been out since, which is slightly curious. Where are we? 20 minutes into the session, maybe, are we? 25 minutes in. It's only completed that one lap.
Jeremy, spurred on by you, poking them with a stick.
Great.
And we saw the Era Motorsport car going slowly earlier on. Nick Damon has some news.
Yeah, down the pit lane with the 18 Era Motorsport car. The nose has come off, but they are sitting there with the driver hands folded, almost perplexed. I think it's Ryan.
Ryan DL
in the car. I've got Connor Zidic next to me. I'm not sure how much you'll know. Connor, what's the question mark? What's the problem? What's going on with the 18?
Yeah, we're working with some electrical issues here just to start the session, but we'll get it sorted out and get back out there shortly.
There is nothing worse than electrical issues in a racing car, is there?
Yeah, there's not much a driver can do about it, but I'm confident in this Era Motorsports team. We got a lot of momentum after Daytona, so I'm excited for this weekend.
Yeah, as you say, it was a great performance by the team and yourself as well. I mean, what are the realistic aims in this very competitive class for you guys?
Yeah, we just got to be consistent and do our job. And, Ryan and I and Dwight have been working really well together. So we got a lot of confidence. And, you know, I'm excited for the whole year, honestly, to go for a championship and, just kind of stay consistent and do our jobs.
You're running a dual program this weekend. quite different with the MX-5s, the Wheeling MX-5s of the year in motorsport. P2, how's the MX-5s going for you?
Yeah, we started on the pole later today in our first race, so far so good, but those races are wild and anything can happen, but it's a lot of fun, so I'm looking forward to that race. It's around 1 o'clock, so I'll have a busy day, but I'm looking forward to it all.
But it's a completely different mindset, isn't it, with the Wheeling MX-5? I mean, in that thing, it's all drafting as close as you can. It's total action here. It's, you've got to look after the car for 12 hours. I mean, how different do you approach those races as a driver? To me, it's massive, but for a professional racing driver, it's just entirely different?
Yeah, it's a completely different driving style. There's so many different things that, go on. I honestly think the oval racing that I do is more different or closer to and similar to the MX-5 racing than this stuff. It's a completely different driving style, but it's been a lot of fun to figure it out and learn as we go. I'm still learning every session, but, I'm starting to figure it out as we get here to my second WeatherTech race.
Do you find yourself in the P2 just trying to draft up for everyone and get a big train?
Sometimes I got to remind myself that I'm in a prototype, but for the most part, I feel pretty comfortable.
Connor, thank you.
Thank you.
Great stuff from Connor Zilich. There's a name to remember. He's an absolute star. Another absolute star that's come through and learned their racecraft in Wheeling MX-5. There's so many of them down through the years that are in this paddock, former champions and alumni. Of the what is now Wheeling MX-5. Two races to come from them. We'll have them both in sound and vision for you, whether you're here in the States or further afield. Coming down to the hour mark to go in this one. I've seen a number of people wondering who Connor is and how he managed to get the drive in the P2. But actually, he's a very experienced young driver.
Well, he is, for 17 years of age. I mean, he's the youngest driver in the field. We've got three 17-year-olds in this race, which is pretty amazing. If you go back a few years here, you wouldn't think that was even possible, well, legally, apart from anything else. Jake Walker's 17. He's driving in the number 96 Turner Motorsport BMW. Graham Doyle, who made his debut at Daytona. All he's got under his belt, he's also 17 from Clearwater in Florida. All he's got under his belt is a season in the Lamborghini Super Trofeo last season in the LB Cup category. But Connor Zilich, yeah, completely different end of the spectrum in terms of experience for Connor. And he is just a talent in and out of the car, yeah. Seriously impressive. That's why he's part of the Chevrolet's driver development program. That's why he's doing racing for them in NASCAR, in Trans Am. Now doing MX-5 Cup as well, as he said there on the pole, I think, for both races this weekend. He is absolutely stellar.
You look at a lot of young drivers for Team USA. Yeah. Is it becoming now more usual for drivers not to take the single-seater route and to go into something with a roof over their heads?
Sure, yeah, I think it is. I mean, yeah, there's some great opportunities in wheel racing with the scholarships, particularly on the USF Pro Championships ladder up toward IndyCar, but that's just kind of one guy. But for Connor Zilich here, I mean, gosh, he's got on board with Chevrolet through the stock car thing. So, I mean, he could go either way with his career, or any way with his career, not either. I mean, he's got so many options open to him, I think, that, he's the world literally is his oyster. And, but he was so impressive at Daytona. I mean, first time in a P2 car. Christian Rasmussen, we know how good Christian Rasmussen is, and Connor virtually matched him
yes,
for pace.
Did.
And right out of the box, I mean, did some testing, but not an awful lot. But just the breadth of experiences he's got through those Chevy connections has stood him in good stead. And, he's a name we're going to be hearing a lot of over the next quite a few years, I believe, Connor Zilich.
Marvin Kirchhoffer in the number 9 driveway, Faf McLaren. Still sort of getting used to Faf being with the new manufacturer. McLaren just being called a GT3 Evo by the works team now, as their new car is coming out and it has a different name to the current race car. So we saw them out being run by United Autosports in the WEC, and also being represented here in IMSA. Good to see new manufacturers coming to the World Championship in these big races. McLaren broadening their GT portfolio and going up against all the established brands. Nick Damon with a bit of news from the pit lane.
Yeah, down with the 43 car, which is the Andretti Motorsports Porsche. That's the Joe Andretti, Gabby Chavez and Scott Hargrove car. Just wondered down, there was the sound of the electric wheel, the saw, the kind of the mini drill, but it's quite midi drill, to be honest. They're working heavily on that. They're taking the whole pedal box assembly out. So basically the clutch rest or the brake rest and the foot wheel underneath it, the pedals are stated, but they are attacking it with a selection of tools. Obviously, it's either, which is a bit of an odd thing to do. You think it would fit it and work, but obviously something's happened to that, and it's either moved or it's not feeling comfortable with the drivers, and they're having a good old go at it. Never seen that before.
Well, Jeremy, we're just talking about the McLaren and the fact that it is the car that we're used to seeing in North America. Frederick Shandorf, you've just hopped out of the Inception Racing McLaren, 25 kilos heavier than last year from the BOP, but also new tires. How much of a difference do you feel in the car?
You can definitely feel the tires a bit different than last year, but I really enjoy it. This is really cool that you have to manage it as well, so it's more up to the driver actually too. So you can increase your performance doing this thing if you manage the tires well, and that's pretty cool. And it's more strategy in for the drivers as well.
It's going to make a big difference in the race. Also, the heat is going to be an issue in the race. You've just gotten out fairly short stint in the car and sweating. How hot is it in the McLaren?
It's pretty hot. We don't have AC like some of the other cars have, so we're going to sweat a little bit more. But it's fine. The car is performing really good, and we hopefully can get a few steps higher up than last year.
Just off the podium last year in the fourth place, how much are you going to balance your drive time, maybe single stints, because of the heat in the car?
No, we will do double. I mean, it is super hot, but it should still be possible to do the double stint. So we still want to get for the endurance as well, because we are tied on point for that lead. We won that 2 years ago, so we want to try to see if we can repeat that as well.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Pit lane reporters, crowd strike pit lane reporters for the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. Nick Damon and Shay Adam, 100.9 around the world, and here, 100.9 FM around the international raceway here at Sebring, RS2 around the world, and at IMSA Radio if you'd like to get in touch. Hello to Nick Cruz and to Sean Ernst and to Bill. And all of you who are, you've got to say tweeting still, you can't say Xing in, have you? Optimum Motorsport tuned in as well, as we were talking McLaren there. And plenty of McLaren fans would be pleased to see that car out there. One of the other new GT3 cars. We've got Ricci competition back, the 62 car. For Daniel Serra, and great to see that car. Such an evocative car for me, that it really builds on the old style Ferraris, particularly when you look at the back of that car over the rear wheel arches, these elements of the old 330s that ran in the Mille Miglia. I think they've really got the design of that car absolutely spot on, and it's clearly a very, very advanced endurance racing car. Had a chat with the head of endurance at Ferrari, head of endurance racing cars at Ferrari, Fervin Canizzo at Qatar. Well, actually, we'll dig that out and play that in one of the gaps here, because he talks quite eloquently about what a big job it's been for not just the 296 but also the 499P. And how every single part of the Ferrari concern have pulled together with that, with these two programs, and how they've all learned from each other. So we'll try and play that in one of the gaps in the sessions here for you to listen to on RS2.
Yeah, so the Ferraris were very effective at Daytona. In fact, too effective, because after the race, that number 62 Ricci competition car won the category in GTD Pro, and first and third in the class in GTD Pro at Daytona.
Second, third and fourth at Daytona, weren't they, I think?
In GTD.
Yeah, because Wynn
was
one.
That's right, of course. Yeah. Second, third and fourth, that's right. And those cars, after the race, they were able to keep their positions, but they lost... Ferrari lost manufacturer points, actually, as did BMW after that race. And the results were only finalised a couple of weeks ago, maybe a long time after the race. There'd been a major inquest into the speed of the Ferraris. We talked about it right at the end of the race. I think 11 of the top 17 cars of all the GTD drivers, in which there were a lot at Daytona, would have been well over 100 GTD cars. And the top 11 or so, pretty much all Ferraris, all BMWs. Actually, Sheldon van der Linde is at the fastest lap of all, I think, in GTD. But a whole bunch of Ferraris up there. And we talked about it then. And prior to the race, the balance of performance is set not by IMSA these days, effectively, but by the manufacturers themselves.
Well, it was for that race. It's now changed back. The manufacturers have said, we've had enough of that. You do it, we're better than we do. Please take it back.
That's exactly right. But after that race, the technical group had come up with the specifications for the cars, and then Ferraris went a lot quicker than they had done for all the rest of the week during the race. And that was clearly a pretty dominant car in GD, and as you say, there have been some changes since then.
When they did the performance, the actual times in the performance test and at the Raw, the difference, which is where the manufacturers took the data from, and everybody went in the December test, excuse me, they all went out at a weight that was mandated by IMSA, with an amount of fuel that was mandated by IMSA, and with a driver. Each manufacturer sent out one car and one driver, and the manufacturers nominated the drivers. And that was what they used the information from. The manufacturers took that into their working group. And we talked about this at length on Midweek Motorsport last night, and Shea had the stats. There wasn't a massive difference, Shea, in the lap time, was there?
No, so the lap time from the Roar compared to the lap time of the race was significantly slower for Ferrari, about 9/10 of a second from where they qualified to their fast lap in the race. It was 1/10 quicker for the BMW in the race as opposed to in qualifying, but also there was a BOP change that was favorable for all the cars in between the Roar and the race. The only car that was unaffected was the Lexus. It's not based solely on lap times, though. IMSA's decision was based on a series of things, and the issue is that IMSA can't present the exact evidence to the manufacturers, or else then the manufacturers will know to which the window is that they change things. But also, IMSA feels like they were perfectly clear, and the manufacturers feel like their data showed that they were well within their expectations. So I don't see anyone with maliciousness through any of this, to be honest.
I do think it's interesting, however, that the manufacturers, having had a go at setting the tables for Daytona, have now come back and said to the IMSA technical side of things, guys, I think you guys are pretty good at this. On you go. And down through the years, you and I have talked about this, Jeremy, in both Pilot Challenge and in WeatherTech. We have such a wide variety of philosophies of racing cars, of road cars, on which the racing cars are based, of course, for GT3 and GT4. And pretty much everybody has a fair crack of the whip. And we've talked about this a lot. I think it's really interesting how that's played out, and that it's been firmly put back on Matt Curdock and Simon Hodgson's desk again. So there you go. No, honestly, we've had a go. On you go. Thanks very much. Bye bye. We're just going back off to design and build cars. Thank you. Bye bye.
pretty interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. In some ways, it's kind of it kind of underlines just how difficult the whole thing is. Bit of another problem for Lamborghini, the Nine Links Lamborghini. This time the SC63 grounding out quite heavily as it's going over the bumps down into turn one, and that must be fairly uncomfortable for that number 63.
And was that slow? That was a slow mo, was it?
I think so. Yes, but it was certainly hitting the ground a lot more than it should have been. And By the way, we've still not had the Proton competition Porsche 963 back out again. It was towed behind the wall at turn one, and presumably back into the paddock. I can't see it on the pit lane, and just having that confirmed by our CrowdStrike pit lane team in that SC63 at the moment is Andrea Caldarelli.
There's quite a few cars yet to turn a lap time during this session, John. We've had only 50 of the 58 cars that have set a representative time during this session. The ones we're missing, aside from that Proton competition Porsche in GTP, in GTD Pro, the Paul Miller Racing BMW has not, car number one, hasn't turned a representative lap. It's been in and out a couple of times. It's shown us two laps completed, but not a representative time. In LMP2, it was number 18 car. We saw that had the difficulty, didn't we, a little while ago. So that car hasn't set a lap time either. And also in GTD, number 34 Conquest Racing Ferrari, number 43 Andretti Motorsports Porsche, the number 55 Proton Competition Ford Mustang, the number 66 Gradient Racing Acura, and the number 80 Lone Star Racing Mercedes. None of those cars has turned lap either. Curious, they're all different manufacturers. Ferrari, Porsche, Ford, Acura, Mercedes, and then the BMW in GTD Pro. That's curious.
Cher is already on, Cher and Nick already on their way to see if there's any great... it's unusual for people to want to turn down the opportunity to be on track. Now, I will say, this would be the very early part of the race on Saturday, and we qualify on Friday.
Yeah, that's all there is tomorrow. We've got three practice sessions today.
And then qualifying tomorrow, what, about this time?
Yeah, when is it?
Just before lunch, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is.
So you'd have thought that people would have been wanting to be out there when they're setting the grid. Sean Creech Motorsport just running on through turn seven a moment or two ago, but the Stars and Stripes...
12:20 tomorrow.
Oh, there you go. All right, so an hour or so, an hour and a half away. And Joao Barbosa in that at Ligier, the sole Ligier amongst a phalanx of Orica's. And Joao Barbosa making a mistake is very rare. May have just had to run on to avoid someone. Just saw him recovering back to the circuit. Halfway through, 45 minutes remaining. Caldarelli back into the pit lane in the Lamborghini number 63, making its debut. If you are just joining us on a Thursday afternoon in the UK, a little before 3 o'clock, a little before 4 o'clock in Europe, hello, welcome along to RS2 at IMSA Radio. Hello to the Williams supporters. We are Williams Group. Happy to hear Frederick Schandorf on IMSA Radio a few minutes ago. Hello to Liam Redford and Arvid Gutblad, Brent Mayer, Captain Ryan. Hello to Blur Fiend, listening for Turn 7. Grandstand's a bit toasty already, and it's not even midday. Fabulous crowd here. Hello, Blur. I like the smaller version of the RV, by the way. That was a great idea. Brought that down on Wednesday. And both of our CrowdStrike pit lane reporters have just said, Blur, if you think it's toasty sitting on the grandstands, put on a fire suit and walk up and down pit lane. And I'll add to that, put on the fireproof underwear, a helmet, a hands device, and sit in a hot racing car. Let's check in with Gradient Racing. They were one of the cars that haven't turned a lap from Jeremy's list a moment or two. Let's see if Catherine Lake can give us an update in this CrowdStrike pit lane report.
And we are very much hiding in the shade. Kat, thanks for coming off the pit box. We haven't seen a representative lap time from the Acura yet. What's been going on with Gradient?
Yeah, it's not a problem for me to get off the pit box at the moment because, as you can see, the car is in the garage. I'm not really sure what the problem is, but the team took the car back to the garage and they're going to check it over and they're going to let us know if we're going back out this session or not. So it's good that it happened early in the weekend, but obviously we're losing valuable track time, so we're a bit frustrated.
But you guys had a great showing early on at Daytona. I mean, the car has pace. Yes, you're 30 kilos heavier than you were here last year, but new tires as well. So are you still expecting to be as in the fight as you were at Daytona?
Honestly, I have no idea. You know, like, I look at the BOP table and it's so all over the place different that I don't know where we stack up. And we were hoping to find out where we stack up in this practice session, and we don't really know. So it could be good. It could be less than good. I would tell you if I had an idea. But we had pace at Daytona. It was great. We're hoping to have pace here. I don't know.
It's so frustrating when you don't have any clue as to what's wrong with the car. For you, personally, Sebring, 3 DNFs the first time you were here with the Delta Wing. Nothing since. You've finished the race every year since. This track, you've come so close to winning the 12-hour. What would it mean to get that win and on Sheena's birthday, too?
Yeah, I think I owe her that one. It would mean everything. Obviously, it'd be fantastic. We're just hoping for a finish first and foremost, and then obviously a good finish. You know, I've been so close here. I got a drive through when I was in third a couple of years ago, and we got hit early on last year. And it just seems to be that one that evades us. This track is just so brutal. You know, it beats the cars up. But it's also so storied and so historic. It's such a great race that we really do want to... We've had a run of bad ones, and we want to break the curse and have a good one.
Nothing but good luck this week.
Thank you.
Yeah, Stephen Bagalia joined in with the ladies that were driving for Gradient at Daytona. Electrical problem, I think, from... memory that stalled what was a good run. Hello to Harry Chandler, who's in Crewe in the northwest of the UK. Now, we've got some news from Harry that has Le Mans connotations coming up. It's a great effort that he's putting together. Harry, in his last hour of work at Bentley at the moment, before heading off home and tuned in. Hello, Harry. Best to you. And we'll be talking to Harry on Midweek Motorsport in the next week or two as we launch what is a very exciting project for a very good cause. Hello to Alan Sabatino and Harry Searing at Crewe. I'm trying to imagine some Floridian sunshine outside the office, but it's not working. Harry, I've got to tell you, it is a lovely at 10 to 11 here. It's 24 Celsius in the air, but it is 71% humidity, so it's a bit toasty at the moment. Nick Dearman is out in it, enjoying every second. Just think, you could be in Milk Keynes in that cold at the moment, Nick.
Yeah, I'm quite pleased not to be in the drizzle, though it is a little bit muggy, it has to be said, with a fellow Brit, with Jack Hawksworth. Jack, I mean, the first thing I have to say is, you know, I suppose Sebring has to go better than Daytona.
I mean, obviously Daytona was unfortunate with the incident at the beginning of the race, but this is racing, it's one of those things, so put it behind us. Up until then, we'd had a great weekend across both cars, so we come into Sebring full of confidence that we can bounce back at this one.
How much work has the team done in the intervening 6 or 7 weeks?
I mean, a lot of work over the off-season to get ready for Daytona, and then after Daytona, it was a lot of work to turn the cars around and come back ready for this one. I mean, obviously the results were there at Daytona, but I feel like as a team we performed well, and it was just unfortunate the way it played out, but continually working to get better, and I feel like we're in a good shape for this weekend, and we'll see what we got obviously on Saturday.
How do you feel the Lexus will compete against the other chassis? I mean, there's been another shuffle of BOP. You weren't too affected by it?
I don't know, to be honest. We won't really know till the race. Obviously there's some really competitive cars out there, some really competitive teams, a lot of good drivers, a lot of new cars at a track that we've not seen them at yet. So to answer that question, I really don't know. Hopefully we're up front and we're in the mix, but we'll know by Saturday.
The massive challenge of the race is that we're going to start in about 16 degrees. We're going to peak at 31. This is air temperature, not track temperature, 31 in the sun. And then by the end of the race, it's about 23, 24. Where do you set the car up for? Do you set the car up just to be good for that last hour, or is that just too dangerous?
No, I mean, you've got to set the car up at the end of the race. That's when the race is kind of is won, if that makes sense. But you can lose it in the first 10 hours, right? So you have to be able to survive in the heat of the day and have something which is drivable. But then, yeah, I mean, at the end of the race, if you want to win, you've got to have the pace, and that's when you need the car to be in the right window. So something which is drivable during the day, but then fast at night.
So does that make night practice this evening the most important session of all?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, 100%. Yeah, the night's the most important here, and we'll see everybody in the night tonight, and then we'll hopefully have a bit of a better gauge of where we're at.
Great stuff. Thank you, mate.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Always great to hear Jack Hawksmith on our CrowdStrike Pit Lane Report. But Nick Damon there, it's a fair point that Jack makes, and it sounds vaguely bonkers, to be honest, to say, no, you've got to have a car that works in the last hour, couple of hours of the race here, Jeremy. And I thought Jack made a good point there. You win it at the end in the dark, but you can lose it in the daytime. And it's about getting that balance right. You've got to have the car sorted so you are surviving those high temperatures in the middle of the day, middle of the race.
That's exactly right. You've got to keep yourself in contention as much as you can. As competitive as the field is in all of the classes, and particularly in GTD, you can't afford to be off the pace at the beginning of the race. You need to be in contention all the way through. And with the temperature variations here and the fact that the Sebring track is notorious for being quick one day and not the next. Yep. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times I walked down the paddock yesterday and speaking to people, and they were telling me, oh, but we were testing here a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, at the test.
Conditions, yeah, yes. At the test a couple of weeks ago, where the conditions were just about the same as they are now, and all of a sudden we're a second or more slower than we were then. We don't understand it. We know there's more time in the car. How many times have you heard that?
I reckon if I had $10 for everybody... every time someone started a conversation to me, or a sentence to me with, at the test,
yeah, exactly.
... Yeah, it's a fabulous place. 42 cars out on the circuit at the moment. We've still got that issue with the Proton machine that we need to get to the bottom of, the Mustang sampling sponsored machine. Hello to Alex Quinn, first time listening. First time listening to IMSA Radio. I'm sorry, Alex. Really? Do you have a note to say that you've been
late?
We've
been driving a couple of races. Yeah. Is that the same Alex Quinn?
Yeah, I don't know. Alex Quinn 01. Yeah, it is the same Alex Quinn. Yeah. He says, it's making me feel like I'm at Sebring, even if I'm, in fact, sitting in my tractor in wet and miserable England. Is it a big green tractor? Hello, Alex. We're missing you, mate. I know you're missing this as well. Stay in touch as he is on RS2 around the world. 100.9 FM here at Sebring. And I remember as well, at the weekend for WeatherTech on Saturday, we take over Sirius XM 206 with live flag-to-flag coverage, no interruptions for those of you who are suitably equipped. And here in the Central Highlands region of Florida, we've been gifted again the airwaves of Highlands ESPN 1063 AM. So if you have friends around the area or you're moving around during the race and you don't have an FM, well, you'll be able to get us on AM instead for that as well. 1063 AM is Highlands ESPN. And thanks to Barry Foster and the rest of the guys down the road there at WWOJ 99.1. Highlands' first choice for country, always locked in, but number one on the Honda Pilot this week whilst we're cruising around, much to the chagrin of Mr. Damon. We do let him have XM Sirius for a little while as well, though. 35 minutes to go. And here's how it stands. It's Cadillac on top with the 0-1. And it's a Cadillac 1-2. Tom Blomqvist out in the number 31 Whelen Cadillac racing car. Half a second between those two cars. A 1:48.2 for the best of them. Renger van der Zander was last in the, and we can say, gold-fronted car this week. Best of the Porsches is Nick Tandy in the 963 number 6. Car in the pit lane. It's another 0.2 further back, and then another nearly 0.4 back is the first of the Wayne Taylor Racing with Andretti Global. The Acura ARX06s, they were looking at a picture on Tuesday in their colourways. BMW have the 25 car in the hands of Conor De Filippi in fifth position, second away from the best time, but barely half a tenth away from the Acura ahead of it on the time charts. Brendan Hartley bracketing Conor De Filippi with the two Wintilla racing with Andretti Acuras, that number 10, the black and blue car, the tenth further back. Finishing up the top 10 with Augusto Farfus for BMW Team RLL in the 24 car. Matt Campbell, what a run of form he's on at the moment for the Porsche Penske Motorsport number 7. Phil Hansen for JDC Miller Motorsports.
Just turned that car's best lap on his last time around, Phil Hansen. And it's the best of the LMP2 cars. It's the number 11 car for TDS Racing that set the fastest time in LMP2. That was set by Mikkel Jensen a little while ago, pretty early in the session. Hunter McElroy driving that car now. He's thoroughly enjoying his opportunity here with this LMP2 team. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's worked hard. He's from, well, he's actually born in California, but a New Zealander, carries dual nationality with New Zealand and the US. Has been on the USF Pro Championships ladder the last several years. Was racing up last year in Indy Next. Really talented young man, super tall. His dad, of course, runs a very successful Carrera Cup team. But Hunter is a real talent in his own right, and he got the opportunity to drive for this team at Daytona, and we'll be doing all long-distance races this year.
Pick up the rest of the times in a moment, but we've got the opportunity to speak to a driver from the fastest car so far, Cadillac Racing number 01, with that lovely gold livery celebrating 50 years of Mobil 1. Renger van der Zande is with Shea Adam.
Well, the gold medal is the one that you always want to win at the Olympics. So, Renger, putting gold on the car means you're going to be P1 for every session, I guess.
Well, we're a good way way doing that. But, you know, it's a golden car. It's a beautiful car. It's a beautiful track. Always sunny here in Sebring for most of the time. And, you know, this track is, I wouldn't say it's beautiful, but it's more like a monument. You want to win here because it's a monument. But I really enjoy coming here. We've been testing here 1 month ago. It felt really good, obviously. We'll see how the competition is going to be here now. When you're testing, you're always P1. So when the race starts is when it really counts, and that's now. So far, so good. We're tuning away, chipping away the balance. Still some issues there to solve. But, yeah, I think it's a good start.
For the GTP class, the Cadillac has never been this heavy as it was. It was a big weight change. Are you feeling it in the car?
Yeah, you know, it's a big change. You know, weight to a race car is never good. And before, you know, you had a full tank and now half a tank on top. So that's a lot. Especially on the braking, you feel the weight is pushing and all that. So, and unfortunately, we knew only this week when the bulletin came out. So, you know, we haven't tried anything with it. So this is the first time we're racing with it or trying with it. And, yeah, we're making the most out of it. But, you know, free practice is only free practice. There's so many cars on track. It's so busy out there. So to get a clear lap and all that is... So I think the timing says something, but also nothing.
That's a very valid point. Seb last year was second in qualifying, so close to getting that pole position. You guys were arguably the car to beat in the race. How much are you going to put in qualifying tomorrow as far as what you expect from race pace when we get to Saturday night?
We always push to the maximum in qualifying. I think there's points that you can take for the championship. It's good to get a last check on the balance before you go racing. And, you know, qualifying is fun, so you want to go for it. But altogether, for the long race, it doesn't matter so much. Because, you know how it works here. It's sometimes you go one lap down and you still win the race, or maybe two laps down and you win the race. So there's so much that can happen. There are so many safety cars on this track, and especially with the field being so big, we expect a lot to happen. But, hey, you know what? Sometimes when you expect a lot to happen, nothing happens. So be prepared for that as well.
Yeah, you mentioned the fact that there's so many cars out here, a track that's only slightly bigger than Daytona and yet a slightly smaller field. Does it feel like Daytona? Does it feel that busy?
Well, in Daytona, you got two long straights where you pass four, five, six cars sometimes. And here you have to wait for the next corner to pass the next one. So you can really get bumped up. And also, I was behind a Porsche just now. You know, if he has a better, you kind of get lucky sometimes on the straights to pass two cars. And then you have a big car gap to the rear or to the front. So it's not an easy track to overtake the GTP cars. So you have to be smart on strategy and be smart on traffic as well. But I like to do the traffic thing. So I think that's our strength as well.
Good luck this weekend, Renger. Hopefully getting that first win.
Yeah, I'm aiming for it.
I like to do the traffic thing, says Renger van der Zande. Here's the cars who haven't turned representative lap times yet, although some of them have got a couple or three laps to their name. Scott Andrews for Lone Star Racing. That car was off the track very early on. It's done a few out and in laps as we've got a spinner down at turn 7, and that's the Whelen Cadillac, number 31, currently driven by Tom Blomqvist. And he's just run on... turn 10, isn't it, that, where it went straight on. So Tom got a little bit further round. No harm, no foul. It's been very dry here, so he'll get across the grassed area. Going to be a bit careful as he gets to the edge of the track that he doesn't catch the spoiler or get in the way of a Lamborghini, for example. That's the bright green number 19 for Iron Lynx coming through. All right, Scott Andrews, Lone Star Racing, was off the track earlier on, has done a few out and in laps, but no more. We've heard from Cat Legg that after Tatiana Calderon took out the Gradient Racing Acura, they've been struggling, and that car's back in the garage. No laps completed at all for the Proton Competition Ford Mustang GT3. So that's one we need to find out. And it's not showing... Well, it is showing on pit lane, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's sitting there. So our CrowdStrike pit lane team is going to have a... Shea Adams heading back to the garage area to see what she can find. We should be able to pick her up from there. Conquest's Ferrari, that's the number 34 car, hasn't turned a representative time yet. Neither has the Aero Motorsport car. We saw that having problems earlier on. Jimmy Bruni disappeared after coming out of the pit lane right at the very first green flag, caused the first red in the Porsche from Proton Competition, the number 5 car. Madison Snow and the rest of Paul Miller Racing, they haven't done a representative lap time, been out back into the pit a couple of times. So both of the Proton cars, as Jeremy points out in my ear, have had issues this morning. The Jimmy Bruni one, at least he got out of the pit, but he hasn't scored a lap. I mean, he literally got out of the pit, came off the pit lane speed limit and pulled over to the left-hand side of the road, and that was all she wrote.
Yeah, very frustrating for that team as well. But number 55 car, I don't think has even been out of the garage yet, so not sure what the problem is there. That's curious.
It showed that it was in pit lane at the start of the session.
Yeah, did it? All right.
At the start of the session, but it hasn't even shown us going out.
Yeah. No sector times at all. And even the number 5 Porsche does have a sector time, because the first sector is right after the exit of turn 1. It did make it that far, so it does have a first sector sort of time.
Let's go to Shea and see if we can pick up. Well, we're stretching our technology a little bit, because this is a CrowdStrike paddock report. Shea?
Thankfully, they are the first garage down by the split by the tower, so not stretching it as far. Again, I'm picturing that leash that we were talking about yesterday, John, that you sort of extend for little puppies and then click it off every now and then. The Mustang is up on the high jack stands. It's actually got all 4 wheels and tires on. I heard it revving a few moments ago. They had a computer plugged into it, and it looks like they might be getting ready to lower it here in a minute. There is no mechanic in the car, just mechanics around the car. So that's that update. The number 5, the Porsche 963, is on the low jack stands. It's probably 6 inches off the garage floor, but the engine cover is off, and there is a good deal of shouting regarding that car. Very few mechanics actually around it, though. So I think the Porsche might be a little bit more of a trouble than the Mustang.
Back in the pit lane, and behind the pit lane, actually, is Ewan Andler, who I would say hasn't got out of the 5, because the 5 only just got out of the pit. So, do you know, what is the problem with the car?
Yeah, I'm really not sure. We had an issue with to switch on the car to the combustion engine, so we were back to the pits trying to fix the issue. We don't have the radio here directly with them, so I'm not too sure about the issue exactly, but hopefully we're going to be able to sort it out and be back on track maybe for a few laps in this session, but at least for FP2.
So was it the case that it actually got to the end of the pit lane and out of the pit lane on electric power, and then they tried to get the engine to start, it didn't start? Is that what happened?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I need to go back to the pits to be sure with Jimmy, but I think, yeah, that's what happened.
looking at more positive things, I mean, moving forward, let's say it gets started. How are you feeling about Sebring with the Porsche 963?
I mean, I have no idea yet. Honestly, I think it would be amazing. It's going to be the first time for me with this car on American track and very special in Sebring especially. So hopefully we'll try to, let's say, get someone with a baseline setup to, yeah, to work as fast as possible because we've not been there for the test. So it's a bit of unknown, everything for us. So we'll try to maximize everything, all the track time we have to be somewhere in qualifying, especially for the race. So, yeah, really looking forward to hit the track.
Julian, thank you much. And continuing with this story from your CrowdStrike pit reporters, Shane.
Well, it looks as if the 55 Mustang won't be going back out during this session. They just signified to Ryan Hardwick and to Gianmarco Liverato that they should go get their stuff from the pit. That being said, Corey Lewis is putting his gloves on, and it looks like they are putting the floor back on the Mustang. Meanwhile, Jimmy Bruni has been told to put his stuff on, and he just put his earphones back in, getting the headsock ready and the helmet as well. So perhaps we could be seeing life from both of these cars again. Maybe Hardwick was actually told, hey, go back out there. We might get you in the car before the end of the session rather than get your stuff.
Sure, you're at the Proton garage there watching the Mustang and the Porsche. Is it... let's look at the Porsche first of all.
Okay.
That was apparently a problem switching from the hybrid power to the internal combustion engine and getting that to fire when Jimmy came out the pit lane. Are we looking at any obvious Porsche assistance going on there? Because there are Porsche technicians here who are assigned to each team.
There is not a single person wearing a Porsche shirt around this car. They are all Proton competition mechanics.
Right, okay. Well, we'll hopefully have a word with the team and see if we can get the full story on that. As Shea Adam heads back to continue with our CrowdStrike pit lane, which is a CrowdStrike pit lane report rather than a paddock report. Apologies for the one or two bits and pieces of scratchiness there, but you'll understand why we wanted to stay with Shane and get that information. And stretching our BSI technology absolutely brilliantly there. And thanks again to the team from BSI, as always, with our communications here on IMSA Radio. No slight on them that we had a little bit of scratchiness there because we were not exactly within our operating parameters, I think we could say on that. 20 minutes to go, and a number of cars then, half a dozen or so cars we've just mentioned there with problems. Let's go through the other times we promised them. So we got through LMP2, GTD Pro is Vasa Sullivan in the number 14 with their number 14 Lexus RCF. Then it's Daniel Serra for Risi Competizione in the 62 Ferrari. And in Pro, next up is AO Racing in the Porsche, the number 77. However, just sandwiched in there is the RCF GT3 of the number 12, Vasa Sullivan. Aaron Tielitz has just gone out of the pits there. He leads GTD from Mick Grenier for Kortoff Preston Mercedes AMG, the number 32. That car's in the pits. And in third, it's Giorgio Cernagiotto for Cetilar Racing, the blue Ferrari 296, the number 47. That's your top three in each of those classes. At the head of the field, it is still Cadillac from Porsche Penske Motorsport, from the two Wayne Trailer Acuras now. And joining us on the broadcast is Nick Tandy with Nick Damon.
Yeah, this is. I keep bumping into you, one week it's at a kart meeting and the next week it's at Sebring. Slightly different. The weather's nicer here, isn't it?
It's very different, yeah. It's nice to come. I know when I left England, it was basically the clouds were on the floor and it was raining and it was windy and it was foggy, and then we arrive here and the sun's out. So, yeah, great.
So you're driving a works Porsche and it's Sebring, but far more importantly, the next generation of Tandys kicked off their motorsport career last week. Felix put in a very assured performance in the dry. I mean, how do you assess, when you analyse the data, your son's performance in electric cadet karting?
Well, he got to put it before a panel of judges, actually, because thanks to your excellent commentary, Nick, His head teacher, they showed part of his race that was on YouTube. Bearing in mind, my son Felix is 7 years old. It was his first proper kart race, and he managed to get on a podium. So he was very happy with himself, and he got to show it in front of his classmates, and they all loved it. So, of course, I didn't plan on doing the next round, which is next week in the North of Wales, which I'm sure will also be lovely in British winter time. But, we're going to have to go and do that because he did such a good job at the last one.
Hey, if anyone wants to see it, it's on YouTube on Karting Live TV. It was last week. It was we also have an interview with Nick as well in the show, so you get plenty of sports content as well. But how was it being the karting dad? Was it very? Yeah, you're especially not so alienist, but perhaps you're a single seat driver. You're used to seeing people driving cars you care about, but seeing a kart and a driver you care about, what was that like?
It's different. I mean, it is totally different. And you know, I've run a race team in the UK for a long time now, and you see it from the pit wall side. You know, I obviously get to see it as a driver. I get to see other people drive my car, you know, as part of the team that we have there, sort of thing. I also get to see what it's like from a team boss's perspective when somebody else is driving your car, and it's I get the same level of competitive enjoyment out of it. But when it's, when you see your son doing it, and especially because I know, he's... Funnily enough, he's a competitive person. I mean, I have no idea where he gets that from, but he hates it when he gets his ass kicked, whether that's in football or racing. And then I have to deal with it afterwards. So I knew that how happy he was going to be about being competitive at something he enjoys doing. So, yeah, watching it and kind of knowing what he was going through, it is different, and it's great. You know, it's just great to see. I think as a parent, you just want to give your kids the opportunity to enjoy themselves and, you know, do what they'd like to do. So, yeah, it's good fun. We enjoy it, so we're going to do some more.
Great stuff. So I won't be in Wales, so I'm doing another parental duty. I'm giving my stepdaughter away at her wedding, so it's just me and it's just you, Joe. But more importantly, we're now at Sebring with the Porsche. It's the car, not the car number, but the car that won at Daytona. Does this now make you the favourite?
I don't know. You tell me. I think... I don't think there's any favourites at the moment. Sebring is obviously very different to Daytona from a track perspective. The weather is going to be very different. The temperature is going to be very different. There's a lot of different variables. So, you know, we have proven... I think we've proven we've advanced as a team and as an operation, obviously. The reliability of the car is vastly improved over... so far, at least, over what we've seen last year. We're proud of, I think... You know, as a team and as a manufacturer, of what we've been up to over the course of the last 12 months, let's say. But as for a failure for Sebring, I don't know. It wasn't our best track last year as Porsche as a manufacturer. You know, there were certain chassis that seemed to, or certain manufacturers that seemed to like it here more than others. But it all comes down to how things roll on the day, and when the race starts, it can be very different conditions to how practice is, how all your winter testing is done. So, the good thing with IMSA and GTP and all the classes, really, they're always close. You know, you're always going to have a chance, even if you haven't got the car that is the fastest, hasn't got the half second that some cars might have on others in qualifying. Come the race, you will always have a chance, whether that's through team execution, luck, what goes on strategy, whatever. So... we're looking forward to it. We like to go racing.
Have a great weekend. Thanks, Nick.
Yeah, cheers.
Boy, Ian, James, we last saw each other on the other side of the world in very different but still hot conditions on a track that's intimidating and, quite frankly, scary. How good is it to come home to a place like Sebring where you've won three times?
Yeah, definitely. To come to somewhere that I know so well, it takes up some of that anxiety that you automatically have going to a new track. So it's kind of like coming home. Don't need to worry about how to get around the track. Just need to focus on the car and my driving.
The heat is quite substantial, and it's only going to get worse as we get into the race. Does the Aston Martin Evo have air conditioning? Is it a comfortable car to drive?
Yeah, it has AC. It's very comfortable to drive. Obviously, when you run the AC, it's a bit of a trade-off to a little bit of power loss. But it's a really nice environment inside the car if you choose that way.
with Zach and Roman, you've got a couple of Canadians in the car. You're the one who's from Scottsdale, Arizona, or been there for a while. So are you feeling more acclimatized to this situation than perhaps your Canadian cohorts?
Well, for sure. I'm used to this heat from Phoenix, but now Roman lives there, so he's halfway to progressing to get a little bit of heat hardiness. Zach just came from minus one, so this will be a tough weekend for him, but they're tough guys, and they'll get it done.
How have the three of you been gelling as a trio? Because it is a different driver lineup.
Yeah, obviously, first time as a Daytona driving with Zach. A super good guy, easy to get on with, you know, very professional, excellent in the car, and we really enjoy having him on Heart of Racing.
Second at Bathurst, second in the WEC season opener. Would you trade a second here at Sebring for good points on the season?
You know, it's all about getting good points for Roman for the championship. You know, we'll see how the cards stack up, but, you know, to get on the podium would be a dream here at Sebring again.
Good luck this weekend, Ian.
Thank you.
Yeah, Ian James, much think I'm stalking him because I turned up at Qatar for the prologue. I don't think he was expecting to see me. Spin out on the circuit, and it's the wins. Number two LMP2 car, currently in the hands of Nico Pino for United Autosports. He's got that point in the right direction at turn 10. Just before that, there was a slight off for the Chetelaar car, which was actually the first car that came across that spinning or spun LMP2. And who's in the Chetelaar car at the moment? Antonio Fuoco behind the wheel of that car. He's got a point in the right direction. Car was down at Wins HQ earlier in the week, being shown off to all of the associates down there, and before it came up here to be loaded in.
Strange seeing the Wins livery there, not on a PR1 Matheson car. It has been for the last
good point.
Few years with Ben Keating. Moved across to United Autosports for this season, of course. So a different co-driver lineup there for Ben. The two Bens it'll be for the full season, Ben Keating and Ben Hanley. And then Nico Pino, youngster from Chile, filling in as the long-distance driver in the Michelin Endurance Cup events, as you were talking about earlier on, John. There'll be five rounds of that championship this year, not only Daytona, Sebring, and then Watkins Glen and Petit Le Mans, also that six-hour race in Indianapolis as well.
I'm looking
forward to the end of the season.
That.
Yeah, everybody's looking forward to that one, I think.
Yeah.
It's a good return to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway road course for IMSA last year, and a lot of excitement about that event moving forward at extended race distance.
Down into the last 11 minutes now, and still, I mean, I'm scratching my head. Scott Andrews has gone back out again now for Lone Star Racing, so that car has gone out. Also, Corey Lewis did go out in the Ford Mustang GT3 for Proton, so after its trials and tribulations and having the floor off and all kinds of things, that car is now back out onto the circuit. No sign yet of Jimmy Bruni and the Porsche 963, which seemed to have a problem with the internal combustion engine firing up. Neil Verhagen for Paul Miller has been out as well, but then now
only completed six laps in the entire session.
Yeah, and it's just gone back behind the wall, I'm hearing, from pit lane. That's half a dozen cars there and some good teams there. Look, Paul Miller Racing, Proton, Era, Conquest, Gradient, Lone Star.
Yeah.
That's very odd indeed.
It really is, John. I mean, you know, the odd problem here and there, yeah, sure, but not even to get out and turn laps in the first session of the weekend, that's really unusual for this series. And yeah, as you say, you know, we've only had 51 of the 58 cars, that's seven cars that haven't completed a representative lap. They've been in and out of the pits a handful of times. I mean, number one car has turned six laps, number 80 Mercedes also turned six laps, but no representative lap times at all yet.
You're listening to RS2, part of the Radio Show Limited network of channels. Hello, wherever you are. Good to have your company. And around the circuits here at Sebring International Raceway on 100.9 FM RS2 around the world. Race on Saturday, SiriusXM 206. Just give that a little bit of a check on Saturday morning on SiriusXM.com just to make sure they don't swap the channel number on it. It's what it's showing at the moment. You can go into their schedule and search IMSA before all of the big races.
There's improvement for Andrea Caldarelli in the Lamborghini SC63, now up ahead of the LMP2 cars. He's been behind a couple of them up until now. He's just done his best lap at 150.962. That's just over a second off the rest of the group, if you like. There's 1.3 seconds only covers the top nine cars in the class. And then Caldarelli currently another, yeah, say 1.3 behind. Oh, yeah, okay, so double the margin then, first to ninth, and then from ninth to tenth. And then the 11th car, that is that Proton Porsche, yet to turn a lap.
Warning for improper fueling procedure going to. It's just a warning.
It's not the Arne Lynx car.
No, it's not. It's Inception Racing in the number 70. So I think that is the first non-Iron Lynx penalty today. Hey, look, they'll reckon if they've got everything out of the way by now and they're clean the rest of the weekend, that you know what? I'll take that. Yeah. For all the ribbing we're giving them at the moment, they'll take that. Absolutely they will. Running a lot of cars. And, of course, the debut of the SC63 here. And good to see that now. Andrea Caldarelli's pulled that up to 10th position overall. All right, it's a couple of seconds, 2.5 seconds away from the fastest lap, but they are literally bedding that car in, and there is nothing like Sebring. Absolutely nothing like Sebring. Let's dive into the Iron Lynx area of the pit lane for this CrowdStrike report, and Nick Damon has Mirko Bortolotti.
Mirko, it's been a very busy session for all the Iron Lynx Lamborghinis. First of all, a great number of short penalties. Then you had that strange incident out on track. What happened there?
Yeah, well, it's the first session, you know, so we're trying to settle in. Obviously, I've had a little issue on track, but managed to fix it there, so I managed to keep the car running after that. So I think we're going through the program now, and everything looks to be going quite okay. We need to find some pace still. But, yeah, really confident, really good to be back at Sebring. One of my favorite races. So I'm really looking back to be back this weekend for the 12-hour.
Was it a simple case of turning the car on and off again to get it working again earlier?
Can you repeat, please?
Was it just simply turning the car off and on again to get it working again? Because you were crawling round and suddenly you found pace again.
Yeah, there was some sort of electrical issue that I managed to fix while standing on the side of the track. So, luckily, we didn't have to waste the session, and I could return to the pit, so all good from that side. And the car seems to be going really smoothly now, no issues, and as I said, a lot of work to do for us, but we're looking forward to, you know, to go through it. Two more sessions coming up, and then we're going into the crucial part of the weekend.
How do you feel the Lamborghini stacks up against the other chassis? Obviously been another change in BOP. It's a different track from Daytona. Where do you think you are?
Well, you never know. I mean, it's so competitive in IMSA, and you actually never know where you are until you see it during the race. So we will have to just focus on ourselves, trying to get maximum out of what we have, and then we see where we are. In the past, always been a good track for us, so I hope it's going to be the case also this time. But as I said, we don't really know where we are. We just focus on our work, and we push really hard, and then we see where we come out.
Thanks, Mirko.
Down here at Era Motorsport, the number 18 that leads the championship after the win at the Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona. Using my Joe Bradley-like powers of deduction, it's an engine issue because the Gibson tech guys are plugged into the car. Ryan Dial, poor man, has been forced to sit in the car this entire session. The Scotsman, who now calls Orlando, Florida home, just slowly baking away in the car with the giant umbrella and a water bottle on his dashboard at least. But the Gibson, now two engineers are over the wall with the computer. They keep signifying to Ryan to depress different pedals to try and see what it triggers on the computer. And clearly they're not happy with what they've seen. So not good news for championship leaders in LMP2.
Oh, you don't need that. Just 4 minutes to go, Jeremy. I mean, you don't need that after such a good run at Daytona. We've said before how difficult it is now to have a bad race and still make things up in the championship. There is so much competition nowadays, and LMP2 is going to be absolutely nip and tuck all through the season. They're going to be the top class at Canadian Tire Motorsport Park. And, you know, 10 or a dozen all year, that's going to be tough. You're going to have to make sure that the rest of the year is absolutely clean if you have a problem in one race.
That is true, John. Yeah, of course, Daytona went absolutely perfectly brilliant result for that team. And look, it's just the first session here. I mean, everybody in that team has lots of experience, other than Conor Zilic, but he's a star in any case. I think, you know, that they won't be too fazed by this. They'll be disappointed the car wasn't running in the first session for sure, but hopefully they'll be able to get that car out again for the two sessions later on today.
TDS Racing at the top of LMP2 at the moment. Stephen Thomas in the car. And the car's done a 51.3 from the two United Autosports USA entries. 22 from two. Bijoy Garg and Nico Pino in those two cars. George Kurtz, CrowdStrike by APR. Algarve Pro Racing, 0-4 in fourth. That's nice. AO Racing and Spike, the number 99 car. I do love what PJ Hyatt and Gunnar Jeanette and everybody's done there. I know a few people think that they're not taking it seriously. No, they take their racing absolutely seriously. They probably don't take themselves quite that seriously, dressing up as dinosaurs as well as painting the cars. But you know what? It has certainly invigorated some of our younger viewers and listeners and turned some of the young children of fans into fans themselves. They've got the cars in the different classes to cheer for. It's the dinosaur car that we're talking about. Josh Burden makes up the top six for Riley in there. Orica number 74. And in GTD Pro, it's still Vasser Sullivan. In fact, in GTD, it's still Vasser Sullivan. Yeah,
as it was a Daytona in qualifying.
Very good. The Acordis team running two of those similar machines in WEC for the first time at Qatar a couple of weekends ago, in a sort of Toyota GR Racing red, white and black colourway. Cars look great.
I lie, of course. It was Sebastian Prio took the pole in the AO Racing Porsche at Daytona. I think Hawks was the second fastest in qualifying, but Parker Thompson was on the pole in GTD for the first time.
Problem for another driver out there, and this is the Porsche of Pfaff. It was Pfaff, so I said Porsche. I apologise to everybody concerned. It is the Pfaff car, but it is, of course, now a McLaren. $5 in the swear jar. Ollie Jarvis in the number 9 car stuck out at the Jean de Bien Benz. Very quick area of the circuit. I think this will bring out a red flag, which will probably end the session's over. Sorry, I didn't realise we were so close. Just 10 seconds. So there'll be a checker coming out in 4, 3, 2, 1. Now? Oh, my God, that was absolutely spot on as well, wasn't it? And Preston giving it the big wave on the start-finish line. And left-handed. Very nice work there. So I think Ollie had taken that car over too long ago. I'm not sure how many laps he's got. He has been in it a while, excuse me. That's a car that has that is easy to spot with its bright orange and dark grey. It's sort of out of harm's way, but it is going to need a tour back. The majority of the cars have taken the checkered flag with no changes to the classes that we've mentioned.
No, but Tatiana Calderon did turn a few laps, right, a couple of laps, I think, right at the end there in the number 66 Gradient Racing Acura. That's the car we heard from Catherine earlier on. It's touch, we talked about the fact it's Sheena Monk's birthday on Friday.
Yeah.
Two days from now, it's race day, isn't it? And it was Tatiana's birthday last weekend as well. So they'll be looking to celebrate that with a good result here on Saturday in the Mobile 1 12 hours off Sebring.
So still question marks over Paul Miller Racing's BMW, the Proton Porsche of Jimmy Bruni, the number 5 GTP car, Aero Motorsport and Ryan DL, and the rest of the team at Conquest's Ferrari, all really failing to trouble the scorers. A little lap at the end, three laps at the end, I think, there by Tatiana Calderon for Gradient, but not quite up to speed on that car.
And
yet.
The Proton Mustang also turned some laps at the end.
That
moved itself off the bottom of the timing charts there in GTD for Corey Lewis. He turned the best of 2 minutes 2.5, which
work
is
to do there, yeah. I would say.
Yeah, but not bad.
Three practice sessions today, another daylight one, and then the longer evening session. We'll have them all for you, thanks to our CrowdStrike pit lane team of Nick Damon and Shea Adam. Jeremy Shaw was alongside Matron Hindorf in the Global Broadcast Centre. And we'll be back with more on Thunder Thursday. We're like Thursday Thunder. I'm sticking with that one from now on. 100.9 FM around the circuit, around the world on RS2. This is IMSA Radio.
This programme is a radio show limited production. For more, check imsaradio.com and subscribe to IMSA Radio wherever you get your podcasts.